Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to the show. We appreciate you listening for return visitors and also new listeners. We love having you. Our topic, we are right in the middle of fog and wet and Christmas and all kinds of things happening with the weather and staying indoors more than in the summertime. And our topic today is winter allergies. And we're going to talk about triggers and treatments. A lot is the same, and some things are different from season to season. And we have one of our local Atlanta allergy experts with us today who's been our go-to guy a couple of times over the past year, Dr. David Redding. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, good. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Redding just to refresh your memory. He got his medical degree from the Medical College of Georgia. So he's a native Atlantan, I think, aren't you?
Yep. That's right.
And did his residency in internal medicine at the University of South Carolina and then went on to complete a fellowship in adult and pediatric allergy from the University of Texas Medical Branch. So he's double board certified in internal medicine and allergy and immunology. He's also been featured in the media a lot, not just here with us, but a visitor on the Weather Channel and the Learning Channel. So we're happy to have the local expert guy with us here today. So let's start the conversation. I'll tell you, you know, you think allergies sounds like a little bit of sneezing and uncomfortable, but boy, it can really affect your life. And evidently, the CDC reports that it affects over 50 million Americans per year and that we spend over $18 billion trying to make ourselves more comfortable when we have these symptoms. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes.
Those
yes.
are high numbers to me.
You know, allergy is definitely one of the most common chronic medical conditions among Americans. At least 25% of the U.S. population has allergies.
Man, that's amazing to me. And we all know from here, usually we're talking about allergies in the spring when Atlanta turns green and the pollen comes out of the bloom. And we're going to talk a little bit about wintertime kind of consolidates our environment. And there's some other maybe allergy kickups. We'll talk about that in a minute. So anyways, let's start the conversation just by having a refresher about what is happening with the allergic response and the mechanism. What is that that kicks up in our bodies?
Well, essentially, the way allergies work is some people, if they have the right immune machinery in place, they can react abnormally to otherwise harmless tiny particles in the air, such as tiny pollen grains, tiny bits of cat hair, and even other things such as dust mite particles or even cockroach particles. And in some people, when those particles hit the mucosal lining of the nose, nothing happens. But in other people, they generate an immune response due to that small particle binding to a protein that just grabs that particle in the mucosa. And when that protein binds to the particle, it then stimulates special cell types called mast cells to release chemicals that cause the symptoms of allergies, congestion, runny nose, watery, itchy eyes. In some individuals, it can cause constriction of the airways in the lungs that would trigger an asthmatic response.
Very good. So can be not too bad or could be can't breathe.
That's right. You've
got that whole continuum in there. I want to talk a little bit about special considerations, if we would, for winter. What is happening that more intensifies us in the winter? What should be looking at with allergies in the winter?
Well, in the
winter triggers, I guess.
Yeah, in the early winter, which would basically be December and January and early February, there is very little to no pollen in the air.
Right.
Now, in the late winter, mid-February, late February, early March, there's certainly a lot of pollen does get put out in the air before you can actually see it. So that is one thing to remember. In the late winter, especially in the south and the southwest and the warmer areas, there is pollen that starts to be released around early to mid-February, so people need to be aware of that, even though they don't actually see the heavy pollen grains on the ground. But getting back to the early winter, which is around the time that we're dealing with right now, mm-hmm. and late fall, as the weather gets colder, the air gets drier, and your nose becomes drier, and you become a little more, your nose just gets a little bit crankier, a little bit more irritated to anything. And there are many allergens that are not due to pollen. There are fungal allergens in the air.
Like mold, and I'm thinking inside wet. Like
right.
Today's very wet in Atlanta, and I'm thinking like moldy. It's been going to rain for like 5 days. I'm, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right. There's plenty of mold spores in the air in all four seasons, including the winter, and that goes for both indoors and outdoors. And indoors also, people spend a lot more time indoors as the weather gets colder, and pet allergens become really more of a problem. Cat and dog hair and dander and the fine top layer of the skin that flakes off a little bit, those cause a lot of problems in people who may not have as bad pet allergies in the summer, but in the winter when they're inside more, that becomes more of a problem.
Because it's twofold. The pets are in more, and we don't air out the house more. So it's kind of a double duty kind of thing?
Yes, that's okay. Exactly right. And also dust mites, which are microscopic creatures, which actually eat skin that is flaked off the body of humans or pets.
You're grossing me out right before
lunch. Well, everybody in Atlanta has dust mites, and it's not related to really socioeconomic status or anything. Rich people, poor people, everybody has them. And that is a very common allergen. One of the most common allergens is dust mite, and you're exposed to that more in the winter. Mm-hmm. And also even cockroaches, which even though one's house may not be infested with cockroaches, it doesn't take many cockroaches at all to spread enough allergen in the house, which could cause problems. That's another real common allergen is cockroach.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about the difference between allergens and irritants, because I think a lot of people are asking, like, if I'm allergic to pine and I bring a Christmas tree in my house, am I going to not be able to live with it?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. So the main problem with live Christmas trees is they can carry mold on the trunk and in the water. So sometimes mold can certainly cause nasal and lung symptoms.
So it might be the mold on the tree and
not
the tree
itself. Might be the mold on the tree. But in terms of the general question of irritants versus allergens, they both can cause similar symptoms. They both can cause nasal irritation, congestion, runny nose. And the main difference is we can actually cure or significantly help allergic triggers by doing immunotherapy or allergy shots, whereas there's no way we can actually alter the immune response to non-allergen irritants, such as odors from indoor air plug-ins and air fresheners, incense, candles. The best way to do that is just minimize exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in people who have asthma, nobody should be using any indoor air fresheners, especially the ones that plug into the wall, or burning incense, or spraying air freshener odor in the air, because that is a known trigger that can make asthmatics worse.
And we have a lot of visitors this time of year that we may not even know they're allergic to something. So that's a good lifestyle
yes.
kind of tip for this holiday season for sure. What about fireplaces and smoke with people that have allergies or asthma?
Yes, it's best not to use indoor wood fires in the fireplace in the winter, especially if you have asthma or frequent nasal symptoms, because there are lots of chemicals in smoke that are major irritants mm-hmm. to the lungs and to the nose. And generally, most everybody has some form of heat that they can just use to warm the house. And we don't really rely on wood fires anymore in Atlanta, at least for warmth. So you shouldn't build it just for ambiance and atmosphere unless your heat is not working in your house. And there is, if you want to have kind of the ambiance of a fire, I would recommend you just invest in the gas logs mm-hmm. that don't put out a lot of heat, but that will not produce any problems in your lungs or the nose. The natural gas is a very clean burning, and it does not release any of the annoying chemicals and wood smoke.
Right. We talked at the beginning about allergies, but I've heard you mention asthma, which I know is related, a couple of times, and I'm now wondering, is the temperature change a trigger for asthmatics? Like when the temperature drops, does that help or make worse for asthma patients?
For most asthma patients, as the temperature drops in the late fall and winter, that tends to make their asthma worse, because it's actually not the temperature itself that makes asthma worse. It's the drier air that goes along with the drop in temperatures. The drier the air is when it enters the lungs, the more likely it is to cause asthmatic inflammation and constriction of the mm-hmm. airways. So for example, you could be in Atlanta, you can have asthma and be in Atlanta in early December when the weather's not that cold and do okay. But if you were to fly to Denver where the air is even drier, much drier than Atlanta, you could definitely have a lot of asthma symptoms mm-hmm. in that drier climate. But what I recommend in the winter if you have asthma is if it's real cold, you can just not exercise outdoors that day, exercise indoors. If you are obsessed with exercising outdoors and you're addicted to it, I suppose you can wear a little mask or a balaclava type scarf to cover your mouth and nose.
Okay, very good. So you brought up symptoms, and I heard you talk about a couple. I want to talk about what are the most common symptoms we see. I heard you say sneezing, runny nose, watery eyes, nasal congestion.
That's right. And you know, congestion is actually overall the most annoying symptom. If you poll people with chronic nasal symptoms, that congestion is just more uncomfortable than runny nose. But certainly runny nose can be very annoying. Allergies can cause both runny nose and congestion. Some people may have more congestion, some may more runny nose. And a lot of people with allergies can have eye symptoms, eye watering and eye itching. Usually those people will also have nasal symptoms. And then a subset of people with nasal allergies also have asthma. Certainly having nasal allergies is a major risk factor for developing asthma. But there are, of course, many people out there who have nasal allergies who don't have asthma at all.
So what are the percent of people that it's related? Like if you have allergies, will you have like a 20% chance of having asthma also or higher?
Oh, no.
How are they related?
Yeah, we don't know the exact statistics on if you have allergic rhinitis, what is your chance of having asthma. I can give you an estimate just based on my own reading and experience, and it would be, you know, around 10 to 20%,
okay,
which is still much higher than the general population.
Right, right. I hear you. And let's talk a little bit about, because of this time of year, and we're talking about nasal congestion, we're talking about runny nose, that kind of thing. A lot of times people might think that it is actually a cold. So I'd like you to spend just a few minutes distinguishing how can we tell what is the difference between a cold and some kind of allergy persistent thing.
Yeah, so within the first 24 to 48 hours when you start having a lot of nasal symptoms, the truth is it is very hard to tell. I myself have been confused within a day or two of, is this an allergy attack or is this just a cold? But after about 2 days, generally, if you have a cold, which is usually due to a virus, your body feels a little more run down, a little bit worse. You tend to have more discomfort and pain in your sinus areas. You often have more of a sore throat. You're usually not sneezing quite as much, although you could still sneeze from colds. But if you're having symptoms for more than a week, then that's when you're looking more at allergies. That's right, because most viral induced colds start improving within 1 week.
So the length of time certainly is a clue. If it resolves itself, that's a cold, probably not a problem. If it persists, it's probably allergies. I heard that. The location of your symptoms, so if it's more facial, throat, eyes, whatever, maybe allergies, body aches might be more cold.
Right. Body aches, more severe fatigue goes along with colds, certainly. But you know, a bad flare-up of nasal allergies, can make you feel a little bit bad, not usually quite as profoundly tired and run down as if it were a cold.
What about nasal secretions? Is one colored and one's clear, or can you distinguish between them, or does that not matter?
Well, it's not the end-all, be-all. Usually, if the secretions are totally clear, that's more likely to be allergies, but viral colds can still give you kind of clear secretions. And allergies, you can have colored secretions. So doctors now don't put too much stock into trying to assess the exact cause based on how the patient describes your mucus.
Yeah. So let's pretend, okay, so I started feeling really yucky. I went 7 days, nothing got resolved. I've been taking over-the-counter stuff. Now, what's the line at which I am not going to get myself better and I need to see an allergist? Like, what would be some guidelines on, it's just time for you to go check in with somebody?
Yeah, if you're having symptoms several weeks out of the year, especially if it's kind of around the same time of year, or you're having symptoms every month, 1 week out of the month, then it's a good idea to see an allergist and just determine, am I having allergies or not? Because there are some people who have frequent nasal symptoms who don't have allergies, and the treatment plans are different. For people who do have allergies, there's a good way to significantly decrease the allergies by doing immunotherapy, which is retraining the immune system so that it does not react to the allergens.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes in depth.
And generally, we will try that treatment. Now, for the individuals who don't have any evidence of allergies, then we are typically a little more, we may recommend surgery at a sooner time if there's evidence that surgery would help the person based on imaging of the sinuses and imaging of the allergists don't actually do surgery, but there are other otolaryngologists or ENT mm-hmm. specialists who perform the surgery. So there are different treatment plans, and another advantage to doing allergy testing is it just gives the person some peace of mind to know, okay, I'm allergic to these different pollens that are in the air at these certain times of the year, and I'm going to anticipate that next spring I'm going to have these problems. So it's good to start using allergy medicines a week or two before the pollen comes out, because that will definitely decrease the severity of your symptoms when it does come out.
Mm-hmm. So let's back up a little bit, because I know when we've gone from the symptoms, we start talking about treatments. There's everything from minimal kind of treating to this immunotherapy we're going to talk about. But let's just start first. We'll go through lifestyle changes, then over-the-counter treatments, and then medical treatment options, including the rush immunotherapy. I know you spent quite a bit of time, and I know you've worked with the Weather Channel on people preparing their homes and things they can do at home for lifestyle, self-care, and maintenance type of things to minimize their allergic responses. What are some of those?
Well, if you're allergic to pets, cats, or dogs, it's best to keep the animals out of the bedroom and especially off the bed, which is easier said than done. Some cats and dogs will meow or scratch at the door to try to get in the bedroom. But it's also a good idea to buy a freestanding HEPA filter. That's HEPA filter, which cleans and purifies the small particles in the air, and that includes dust mite particles, cat and dog dander, also some pollen. And get one of those for your bedroom, and then any other rooms that you spend a lot of time in your house, like your mm-hmm. living room. They last a long time. It's a good investment. Mm-hmm. The other thing I recommend is buying allergy quality HVAC filters that you change every 1 to 3 months in one or two places in your house, where you unscrew the panel and then you mm-hmm. put the disposable filter in. You can pay about another $10 and get more high quality filters that trap more of the small particles that cause allergies. So that's a good basic thing to do. Trying to keep your house vacuumed at least every 2 weeks is a great idea. I know that's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. If you're allergic to dust mites, it's a good idea to wash your sheets or dry them on high heat or hot water, because that will kill dust mites. You don't need to use pesticides or chemicals to get rid of dust mites. This is not the same pests that Orkin deals with. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Orkin, if it's a good idea to minimize any possibility that you have cockroaches in your house by keeping food tight and making sure there's no crumbs anywhere laying out, and making sure that if you do see cockroaches that you do call the pesticide company mm-hmm. and have them keep those minimized. And there's really no way to avoid pollen in the spring and fall from a practical standpoint. You can minimize your exposure a little bit if you exercise. Exercising in the middle of the day is best, which means usually it's on a weekend. Pollen counts are highest in the morning and at night, so keep that in mind. And when you drive your car, you're exposed to a lot of pollen, so keep your car windows up in the spring mm-hmm. when you're driving. But it's impossible to completely avoid allergies. You just try to do the best you can as to mm-hmm. limiting your exposure.
Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on this hypoallergenic bedding? Does that stuff work? Is it worth the expense? Is it helpful? Not really.
Yeah, so we still recommend buying mattress and pillow casings for people who definitely have dust mite allergy detected mm-hmm. by skin testing, because they're not expensive. They don't have any pesticides. There's no chemicals at all. The weave is just very tight, and it just prevents dust mites from moving out in and out. And so we do recommend that. There is that can definitely decrease the amount of dust mites in your sheets if you do that. Mm-hmm. But I would recommend you buy it from an allergy specialty company. I don't recommend buying dust mite covers just from a regular store mm-hmm. because I'm not confident that they do adequate testing mm-hmm. to see if they actually work or not.
Mm-hmm. What about, I know a lot of people are big believers in nasal irrigation, like neti pots, saline solution. Do you think that's helpful, not helpful?
I think it helps a lot of people, and all doctors are recommending that now in some people. So the way that works is it just moistens the nose, and it can also kind of clean out the secretions and maybe even wash away mm-hmm. some of the small allergies. That's exactly right. And there's really the most popular way to do it is just with a squirt bottle. Mm-hmm. And then there, if you want to get a little more involved, you can use a neti pot, which mm-hmm. is basically the same principle, but you just have to tilt your head. It takes a little more coordination. But one thing to remember, we always recommend, is that if you do that, use water that you have purified through a filter that's at least 1 micron or smaller, or boiling the water, or buying distilled water from the grocery store and using that. We don't recommend just using tap water.
And why is that?
That is because in one state, we know in Louisiana, they have detected a amoeba, which is a very dangerous, tiny microbe that can cause fatal brain infection that is very very difficult to treat. And a couple people have died because they were doing nasal irrigation using either well water, or one of them actually died because they were using tap water and they were not purifying it by boiling it or passing it through a filter. So based on that, we think that there's a chance that amoeba could be also present in other states, especially warmer states in the South. So that's why we recommend that you just be on the safe side by using distilled, purified, or boiled water.
Okay, good recommendation there. Let's talk about some over-the-counter treatment guidelines. So if you really just have a couple of flare-ups in a year, you can live with that. You don't want to go through the allergy shots, which we're going to talk about in a minute. What are your recommendations on how we can appropriately use the Zyrtec, the Claritin, those kind of OTC?
Yeah, so oral antihistamines are the most commonly used allergy medicines because they're generally safe medicines which don't have bad side effects other than some of the older ones, such as Benadryl, can cause significant drowsiness and sleepiness, which you have to be careful of if you're driving especially. But the antihistamines can help runny nose. They can help decrease congestion, sneezing, itching. Typically, they often help runny nose more than congestion, so a lot of people will notice that their stuffiness does not get helped at all by antihistamines, but the runny nose and the sneezing has helped a little bit. So that's an easy over-the-counter thing you can do. The newer ones, which are Zyrtec, Allegra, and Claritin, or their generic equivalents, they've actually, I say new, they've actually been around for at least 10 years or so, but they typically last longer and give you more 24-hour coverage. So we usually recommend that over Benadryl for allergies, just because Benadryl stays in the system for more like 8 hours and it's more sedating.
What about the decongestant versus non-decongestant?
Yeah, so decongestants, the oral decongestant, which is called pseudoephedrine, which the most common brand of that is Sudafed, that is effective at decreasing congestion, including congestion from allergies. So we often do recommend that the person take an oral decongestant, which can, since sometimes it's combined with Claritin or Zyrtec, called Zyrtec D or Claritin D, or you can take it separately for Sudafed. That, and some people do get improvement from that, and now you have to get that behind the counter from the pharmacist because that is the main ingredient that people can use to make methamphetamine drug. But when used in the quantities that are recommended on the box, it is generally a safe drug. We all doctors are generally reluctant to recommend people use decongestants year-round, day in and day out.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, is how long, like, you can't get dependent on it. Like, for 5 years, let's stay on Claritin every day. But in general, what is like a safe time period for like a brief episode?
Yeah, so it's perfectly safe to use oral decongestants for a couple of weeks at a time. And the concern that some doctors have is just if you use it for months and months, could that contribute to some elevated blood pressure? The truth is there are no scientific studies to prove that long-term oral decongestant use causes hypertension. It's just a concern, but we can't say it's fact.
Okay, very good.
I do recommend the nasal spray decongestant Afrin, which is very effective at helping congestion, and it's a wonderful drug that I recommend people use for exacerbations. I do recommend that people not use that every day for more than a week or so, because that clearly can make the nose a little bit damaged, actually, irritated,
Very good. So before we get into a little bit more of the complicated medical treatments, I want to kind of back up and say, okay, if lifestyle changes and OTC management doesn't work, there's actually a process that you go through to find out what are you allergic to. Let's talk a little bit about the skin testing process before we talk about the treatment part, the medical treatment part.
So allergy skin testing is done usually on the back or the forearms, and we no longer actually do the scratch technique anymore. That was very popular in the 70s, and a lot of people still call it scratch, but we don't use anything that's extremely painful. We just use a little, usually plastic, little device which causes a tiny little prick in the skin. It doesn't draw any blood, doesn't really hurt, and it's called a prick test. And after you place the prick, you just wait 20 minutes, and then if the person is sensitized, you'll see a redness and swelling and itching. That is, if they're allergic to that allergen that we're poking you with the prick test, then you'll develop a response within 20 minutes. So it's nice because you can actually see your body reacting to it.
So how many different things do you test for at once?
Most allergists test for a good variety of pollens and molds, as well as some of the indoor allergens that I talked about earlier. And allergists generally test between 40 and 80 in adults to see to try to capture as many different possible allergens that are out there. And certainly in different parts of the country, different things are tested for. Mm-hmm. In the West, you're going to see different trees on allergy skin testing trays than you would in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. And then how long would I stay flared up? Like if I had a reaction, my back looked like crazy for days or 10 minutes, or what would I expect?
No, the itching really gets pretty heavy after about 30 minutes after you place it. But most of the itching goes down by 1 hour, and the swelling and redness goes down after a couple hours. So it does not leave marks on your skin for several days. The next day, you might see a tiny little mark, but it goes away within a couple days.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so some of it's regional. Some of what you test for is also just your medical history, and with saying, tell me when you have these kind of symptoms, and then you'll have a better idea of what kind of what to test for.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay, so we do the and is that all accomplished in one visit then, it sounds like?
Yes.
Yes,
that's correct. We often try to do that at the first visit. Now, oral antihistamines, such as Zyrtec, Claritin, Allegra, Benadryl, those will impair skin testing because you're blocking the main chemical that causes the skin test reaction. So the person does need to be off oral antihistamines for, we recommend, at least 5 days before skin testing is done. But yeah, so that can often can be done at the first visit or a subsequent visit.
Mm-hmm. And are there some other drugs that you should not be on prior to skin testing?
Yes,
there's a long list, but what are some key ones besides the oral?
Most drugs that cause sedation will impair the skin test response. Mm-hmm. That includes tranquilizers such as Xanax or Valium, as well as sleeping pills such as Ambien. And there are a few psychiatric drugs that can interfere with skin testing also.
Okay. So a good question when you make your appointment is, what's that list so I don't screw up my skin test?
That's exactly right.
All right, that sounds good. Okay, so you do the skin testing. You have a pretty good idea of what they're going to be allergic to, probably for the rest of their life unless they do something.
That's right.
Okay, and so then the next course of treatment would be the allergy shots.
Right, and allergy shots, first of all, they don't go into the muscle like most vaccines do, so they don't hurt as bad as a lot of vaccines. They go just underneath the skin. We give them in the back of the upper arm, and there is a rapid way to give allergy shots that is much more convenient than the allergy shot schedule that most people think of now. In the past, the allergy shot schedule that every doctor used was the person came in once a week for anywhere from 6 months to 1 year.
That's a lot
to
of
build
visits.
Up, and that's right, and that is often just impossible for people to do if they work or they're in college. It's just difficult. So there is a rapid schedule where the person can just come in for several hours for two visits, and we can get through about 5 months of allergy shots that would have been done in the past just in two several-hour visits.
So you load them up and monitor them.
Right,
you stress them while they're monitored.
That's right. That's right. We just give a more rapidly escalating dose more quickly, and it's generally safe, and the person can watch TV or do their work or do their business on the computer while this is being done. So it's very easy and convenient. That's what most patients choose because you can get built up to your highest target dose within a month, and then you just have to get an allergy shot once per month, which is not much of a hassle at all. And the wonderful thing about immunotherapy or allergy shots is the person does not have to do it the rest of their life. The goal is to do it for several years and then stop. So the person gets long-lasting benefit after you stop the allergy shots.
So are they cured?
A lot of people are cured, or if you're not 100% cured, 95% of people do get significant benefit from the shots. So they get a significant reduction in symptoms, where they're not as dependent on using the oral or nasal spray medications as they used to be.
Okay, so I heard you say rush immunotherapy. What's rush stand for? Just the fact that it's fast and expedited?
That's right. Okay. That's right. Another word for rush is rapid immunotherapy. That, okay. That's the thing to ask your allergist if they do.
And you're one of the few people in Atlanta, I think, that do that. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay, very good. So any tips, any last-minute tips that we have? We've gone over over-the-counter lifestyle changes, triggers. We've gone over many treatments for patients to do independently with their providers and some kind of convenient expedited options that are kind of unique to what you do. Any tips in surviving this winter allergy season before we leave our listeners?
Yeah, so just keep your homes clean. Make sure there's no water damage in your homes that would promote mold growth. And make sure you keep your house free of dust. Keep it dusted. Keep it vacuumed. If you're allergic to pets, try to keep the pets out of the bedroom. Also know that you don't have to suffer with allergies if the over-the-counter medications such as Zyrtec or Allegra or Benadryl, if those are not adequately helping you or you're having frequent symptoms, I urge you to make an appointment with a board-certified allergist and find out what you're allergic to and find out how you can be cured from your problem.
Right. So I so appreciate that. I know at first blush, like we said at the beginning, allergy problems seem benign, but in reality, it affects our sleep, our work, our productivity, our relationships, a little bit of just being miserable everywhere. So we appreciate the message of you just don't have to be. So get help. And let's let the listeners know how they can find you and get that help. So your phone number and website?
Yes, our office phone number is 404-355-0078. That's 404-355-0078. And the name of our practice is Redding Allergy and Asthma Center. That's R-E-D-D-I-N-G. We're located in North Atlanta in the Buckhead section of Atlanta. And our website is www.reddingallergycenter.com. That's www.reddingallergycenter.com.
Very good. We appreciate that. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, you have some varied schedules. So for those of you that are working that think you can't get relief, you have some early and late kind of appointment times that they can work in their work and also work in their health.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, very good. Well, we're at the end of the talk. Time flies when you're having fun. We appreciate you being our go-to guy and the expert on allergies for us here at the Doctor's Roundtable, and it's a delight to have you back.
Thank you, Tanya.
Okay, very good. And for all you listeners out there, I hope you're enjoying your holiday season. Please visit www.healthgate.com to see what offers they might have for the gift of health for you and your loved ones during this holiday season. Have a great day, and we'll look forward to connecting with you again next week. Bye-bye.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.